Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to Radio Sai's Talking Book Session. You can now listen to selected excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. Chapter 5 of the book is entitled, Birth and Childhood. At the outset, the author quotes William Wordsworth, who said, quote, "But trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home," unquote. Here we learn that during Mr. Moffat's visit to Prashanti Nilayam, he was able to inspect the village of Swami's birth and talk to members of his family living there. However, although he met and talked to members of the family and some old friends, it was from the historian Professor Kasturi that he learned of the main facts about Sai Baba's background, birth, and childhood. Enjoy this narration as it takes you back to the good old days of young Satya Sai.
The most outstanding figure in this family background was his paternal grandfather, Kondamma Raju. He was a small landlord owning farmlands even some distance away from Puttaparthi. He was not rich, but sufficiently well off to dedicate a temple to the goddess Satyabhama, the consort of Lord Krishna. An outstanding musician and actor, he took a leading part in the village religious dramas and operas produced at Puttaparthi and other centers nearby. 24 years earlier, in the year 1926, at the home of Kondamma's son, Pedda Raju, a coming event was being signaled by some strange signs. Pedda's offspring at this time consisted of one son and two daughters, and now, following a long period of hopes, prayers and pujas to the household gods, his wife Ishwaramma was again pregnant. Her prayers had been for another son, and as the time drew near, her hopes were high. But she was puzzled too, for many unheard of things were happening in the house. For instance, the big tambura leaning against the living room wall would sometimes twang in the middle of the night when no one was near to play it. And the madala drum on the floor would throb in the darkness as if an expert hand were beating it. But no hand could be seen. What could be the meaning of such things? Priest, learned in the lore of the unseen, told them that these events indicated the presence of a beneficent power and foretold an auspicious birth. The year 1926 was known as Akshaya, meaning the never-declining, ever-full year, and November 23rd is always, according to the old calendar, a day to be devoted to the worship of the God of great blessings, Shiva. Moreover, in this year, a certain juxtaposition of the stars made the day even more auspicious for Shiva worship. So the villagers were already out chanting the names of Shiva when the rising sun outlined the purple rocky hills beyond the yellow sands of the Chitravati River. And it was just at that moment, as the sun showed its face above the horizon, that under the eaves of Pedda Raju's cottage, the child Satyanarayana was born. He was given this name because the mother's pujas and prayers had been to that particular form and name of God.
Swami was known to be kind at heart right from his childhood days. From the beginning, he was the pet of his village, loved for his beauty, ready smile, and sweet nature.
When Satya began to run about the dusty street and adventure across the mud of the paddy fields and the barren hills beyond, there were certain characteristics that made him stand out from his young companions. Unlike most boys, he had a tender heart for all creatures, human or otherwise. He could not bear to cause or to see suffering. This made him a natural vegetarian from an early age among the meat eaters around him. Many beggars came to the cottage door, and if little Satya were there, none would be turned away without something to eat. More than this, when he met cripples and blind people in the street, he would bring them home and insist that his mother or elder sisters gave them food. Sometimes, the family became irritated by these constant and expensive demands. Once his mother said, "Look here, if we give the beggars food, you will have to starve yourself." This threat did not daunt the child at all. He agreed at once that he would stay away from lunch that day, and he did. Nothing could persuade him to come to his plate.
The same thing happened frequently, and it was through such events that the family had a first glimpse of the strange things that were to take place concerning the child.
On one occasion, when he had really outshone himself with beggar feeding from the family larder, he decided to stay away from meals for several days. Although he persisted in this, he showed no indications of hunger and he carried on his activities without any signs of weakness. When his worried mother begged him to eat, he told her that he had already filled his stomach with delicious balls of milk rice. "Where did he get them?" she asked. "Why, an old man, Tata, had given them to him." No one had ever seen or heard of such a person, and the mother would not believe little Satya's story. But he held up his right hand for her to smell, for like most Indians, the Raju family ate with their hands rather than with cutlery. From the boy's palm, the mother inhaled a fine fragrance of ghee, milk, and curds of a quality she had seldom experienced before. So the child, whose sympathy for hungry strangers robbed his own plate, was nourished by some mysterious, unseen visitor.
Here are a few tidbits on young Satya from his school days.
Satya went on to the higher elementary school at Bukkapatnam. One of the teachers who knew him there remembered him as an unostentatious, honest, well-behaved boy. Another wrote in a book published in 1944 that Satya often used to come a little early to school, collect the children around him, and conduct worship using a holy image or picture and some flowers he had gathered for the purpose. Even if the boys were not attracted to the religious ceremony in itself, he had no difficulty in gathering them around him because of the things which he used sometimes to produce for their pleasure or help. From an empty bag, he would take sweets and fruits, or if a comrade had lost a pencil or rubber, he would produce one of those from the bag. If someone was sick, he would bring out herbs from the Himalayas and give these as a cure. So when Satya went on to the high school at Uruvakonda, he found that his fame had spread there before him. Mr. Kasturi writes in his book on Sai Baba, "Boys told each other that he was a fine writer in Telugu, a good musician, a genius in dance, wiser than his teachers, able to peer into the past and peep into the future." Authentic stories of his achievements and divine powers were on everybody's lips. Every teacher was anxious to be assigned some work in the section to which he was admitted, some out of curiosity, some out of veneration, and some out of a mischievous impulse to prove it all absurd. Satya soon became the pet of the entire school. He was the leader of the school prayer group, He ascended the dais every day when the entire school assembled for prayer before commencing work, and it was his voice that sanctified the air and inspired both teachers and taught to dedicate themselves to their allotted tasks.
Satya's elder brother, Sheshma, a high school teacher, did his best to promote the family's ambition that young Satya might be educated for a good position as a government officer. But things were moving rapidly towards an event that was to change all such worldly ambitions. It was one of these profound and shattering experiences which, in one form or another, seem often, if not always, to precede the missions of great teachers and inspirers of mankind.
At 7 o'clock on the evening of March 8, 1940, Satya, while walking barefooted on the open ground, leapt into the air with a loud shriek, holding one toe of his right foot. In the area, there were lots of big black scorpions, and his companions immediately thought that he must have been bitten by one. But in the dusk, they could not find the black culprit. Everyone was very concerned because of the local belief that no one could survive either a snake or scorpion bite in Uravakonda. However, Satya slept that night without any signs of pain or sickness and seemed quite normal next day. Everyone was greatly relieved. Then at 7 in the evening, 24 hours after the supposed scorpion bite, the 13-year-old boy fell down unconscious. His body became stiff and his breathing faint. His brother Sheshama brought a doctor who gave an injection and left a mixture to be taken when the boy regained consciousness. But Satya remained unconscious throughout the night. Next day, consciousness returned, but the boy was by no means normal in behavior. He seemed at times to be a different person. He seldom answered when spoken to. He had little interest in food. He would suddenly burst into song or poetry, sometimes quoting long Sanskrit passages far beyond anything learned in his formal education and training. Off and on, he would become stiff, appearing to leave his body and go somewhere else. At times, he would have the strength of 10. At others, he was as weak as a lotus stalk. There was much alternate laughter and weeping, but occasionally he would become very serious and give a discourse on the highest Vedanta philosophy. Sometimes he spoke of God. Sometimes he described far-off places of pilgrimage to which certainly during his life as Satyanarayana Raju he had never been.
On hearing the plight of their son, Swami's parents immediately rushed to see him. Several doctors were consulted and various treatments were prescribed, but nothing seemed to have an effect on Satya. Many people thought that an evil spirit had taken possession of the boy, perhaps as a result of someone's black magic. This made his parents take young Satya to an exorcist of great repute.
This expert in devilcraft was a Shakti worshipper before whom it was said no evil spirits dare wag its poison tail. His appearance alone was enough to scare minor fiends away. He was of gigantic stature, with blood-red eyes, wild aspect, and untamed manners. He seemed to work on the general principle that if he made the body of his patient suffer sufficiently, the occupying demon would grow tired of the discomfort and leave it. First of all, the fierce exorcist went through the ritual of sacrificing a fowl and a lamb and making the boy sit in the center of a circle of blood while he chanted his incantations. Then he shaved Satya's head and with a sharp instrument scored 3 crosses on the scalp, scratching so deeply that the blood flowed. On these open wounds, he poured the juice of limes, garlic, and other acid fruits. The parents who were watching this treatment were appalled at its severity. They were also amazed that Satya made not the slightest murmur and gave no sign whatever of suffering. Apparently, if there was a spirit tenant, he too was immune, for he gave no notice of intention to quit. The relentless exorcist arranged that every day in the early morning, 108 pots of cold water be poured over the markings on the scalp. This was done for several days, while other rough treatments went on, such as beating the boy on the joints with a heavy stick. Finally, the Shakti worshipper decided to use his strongest weapon, reserved for the most recalcitrant demons. This is the Kalikam, which is described as a mixture of the entire painful acidic abracadabra in the repertory of torture. He applied the Kalikam to Satya's eyes. The boy's body shook under the impact of pain. His face and head turned red and swelled beyond recognition. The eyes shrunk to thin, tear-exuding slits. The parents and elder sister, who was also present, wept in anguish at the sight. Satya did not speak, but made signs for them to await him outside. When he came out, he asked them to go and fetch a remedy he knew. It was brought and applied to the boy's eyes. The swelling subsided and the eyes opened to their normal size. When he discovered what had happened, the witch doctor was enraged at this interference with his treatment, as he called it. He had been within an inch of driving the demon from the boy, he fumed. But the parents had witnessed quite enough. They paid his fees and mollified him with the statement that they would build up the boy's stamina and then bring him back for a further course of the great man's learned exorcism. Then they took Satya away, still evidently possessed by the demon, who would quote long Sanskrit verses, discourse learnedly on Vedanta philosophy and cryptically on ethics, could sing lovely sacred songs and call for the performance of aarti because the gods are passing across the sky. But little did they know at the time that on the morning of May 23rd would come the great revelation. That morning, Satya called around him the members of the household, except his father, who was busy at his produce store. With a wave of his hand, the boy took from the air sugar candy and flowers and distributed them among those present. Soon the neighbors began to crowd in. Satya, in a jovial mood, produced more candy and flowers and also a ball of rice cooked in milk for each person. The news that his son was performing apparent siddhis before a crowd of people reached Pedda. Suddenly, the father overflowed with anger and resentment. Wasn't it enough that the boy had caused them all this worry and strain over the last 2 months? Now, he must be making a public show of himself with stupid tricks, hiding things and producing them by sleight of hand, no doubt. Although, where the boy had learned such legerdemain, he had no idea. As Satya had for a long time been able to do inexplicable things, perhaps it was not just jugglery after all, but something worse, black magic, sorcery. Thus with bitter thoughts, Pedda found himself a stout cane and went to the house. As he pushed through the crowd, someone ordered him to go and wash himself before approaching the giver of boons. This incensed and angered him still more. Standing before his 13-year-old son and waving the stick threateningly, he shouted, "This is too much. It must stop. What are you? Tell me, a ghost, or a god, or a madcap?" Satya regarded his wrathful, distraught father and the unpraised stick. Then he said calmly and firmly, "I am Sai Baba. I have come to ward off your troubles, keep your houses clean and pure." A member of the family approached him and asked, "What do you mean by Sai Baba?" He replied enigmatically, "Your Venkavaduta prayed that I be born in your family, so I came."
In the Raju family, there was a legend of a great sage named Venkavaduta, an ancestor who had been looked upon as a guru by the people of hundreds of villages around the area. But only a few of the old folks gathered that morning around the Raju cottage had ever heard of anyone called Sai Baba. Those who had heard the name had no idea who he was. Baba was, they all knew, a Muslim word. Almost everyone present there knew that there was something special about little Satya. Otherwise, how could he do such strange, miraculous things? And now, since his illness, he often spoke like an old sage or seer. But who was this Muslim, Sai Baba? And what could he possibly have to do with the little boy they had all known, admired, and loved for nearly 14 years? Dear readers, Mr. Howard Murfitt deals with the dilemma of the two sais in the following chapter. We hope you will continue to join us for the next episode. With this, we come to the end of today's presentation. Till then, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.